thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wole. Here, my boy Will T. I'm gonna patch Will T on real quick. Had technical difficulties with the microphone. I had to change mics on the dime. You know, we're doing our social distancing show. Let me cue Will T on for a quick sec. Ray Jeezy is out. Here we go. Will T, what's good, my man?
Nothing much. How you doing, my brother?
I'm good, man. I had a mic issue. I had to switch mics. My mic went dead on.
Yeah, I heard. I couldn't really hear, but I heard what you were trying to say.
Exactly, man. Had to switch up, man. How you doing, my man?
I'm cool, man. You know, just enjoying the time in isolation, I guess.
I know, right? You know, I dropped 20 pounds during isolation, dude.
That's what's up, man.
I know, man. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, this is the opportunity to better yourself, man. This is the opportunity.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's definitely a great opportunity for you to either A, you know, improve, for you to do a couple things.
Yeah.
Improve your mental health,
mm-hmm.
work on your mental health, you know, learn a new skill, lose weight, do something to better yourself. Don't just, you know, watch TV,
yeah.
watch social media, and mm-hmm. do something to better yourself.
Yeah, I'm with you. Also, RIP Don Shula, man. The great Don Shula died at the age of 90. One of the greatest coaches of all time. So RIP.
The winningest coach in NFL history. The man only had 2 losing seasons
mm-hmm.
while coaching like 30 plus seasons. I think like 30 plus seasons. So, mm-hmm. you know, definitely, a trailblazer in the NFL and coaching in general. So rest in peace, and rest in peace to Don Shula. My condolences to his family.
All right, well, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. So for the folks who want to, you know, be down with the Urban Sports Scene for a minute, you make sure you check out our podcast on all those platforms. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our new Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. We have everybody in the same communities, you know, in terms of sports podcasters, sports fans. We're just trying to build debates and also put people on in terms of other podcasts. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. The Wizards point guard John Wall declaring that he will be better than ever once he returns. At 8:20, quarterback Jameis Winston signing with the New Orleans Saints. Finally, at 8:35, we'll discuss the popular documentary The Last Dance, featuring episode 6 and 7, which aired on Sunday. But first, John.
Well, you mean five and six.
Sorry, five and six. I'm sorry. Five and six. But first, John Wall. Well, on the Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes podcast, All the Smoke, and I feel like they stole that thing. I use that on social media, like I want All the Smoke, and I feel like they stole that title. But that's a whole different thing. That's a whole different subject.
Yeah, that's a whole different subject for a different time.
Exactly. The Washington Wizards point guard John Wall said the league is going to see the best and healthiest John Wall ever. Do you believe him?
First, I got to take my hats off to Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. Those guys, they put together an amazing podcast.
They do, real talk.
It's probably the realest podcast mm-hmm. in sports, you know, where it's kind of like barbershop talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're asking the athletes the questions that we, you know, that we want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And the athletes, you know, show a certain level of vulnerability and candor by being straight up with them. Having said that, I hope so. Shoot. You know, I hope we see the best of John Wall, you know, with the 2 surgeries he's had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I've stated numerous times on the show is one of the things I was concerned about as he gets older is a lot of his game is built off of, you know, he's highly skilled, but it's built off athleticism,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
the speed, jumping ability. And plus, you know, he goes to the hole a lot and does get, you know, he ends up on the ground sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this, we see a John Wall with a better jump shot, better decision making with the ball, with the ball in his hands, meaning not making a bunch of jump passes. Mm-hmm. And I hope we see him being able to change pace or change the speed of the game, you know, whether opposed to him, you know, getting out on the fast break and going 100 miles an hour, you know, him showing the ability to use that burst when needed. So,
no, I'm with you. I think that that's what you hope, right? Get all that time to fine tool his skill set. And you hope that the main thing, like you said, Will T, is to me, the like, you know, developing a better jump shot. Because I think as a point guard, you know, John Wall, to a certain extent, his basketball psychology is up there. I mean, it's not like high like LeBron or some of the other players, but it's up there. He's a really, and Chris Paul is another individual, but he's a guy that was getting close to that. But you hope that he kind of finds his way where he knows when to take a shot and when to set people up. To me, he's still one of the purest point guards in the game when healthy, right? Because you saw how he runs the Wizards team. It's not like he's a shoot-first point guard, so I'm not saying that. But you do hope that to make it easier for him so he can have a long run in the NBA, you hope that he develops a more consistent mid-range shot. Or I like to say, you know, taking high-quality shots, because I think his mid-range shot has improved, but I don't think in terms of the quality of the shot, you know, that's the thing that he's still working on, to take a quality shot. Like, he's so fast, and hopefully he still has that speed, but he's so fast, people are going to give him space because they're scared that he'll go right by them. So it's up to him to take a balanced, quality shot, you know, in that mid-range situation, instead of, you know, shooting fadeaways or whatnot, find his spot and just continue to hit that, you know, take the shot from that spot. Because, again, people will be scared of John Wall going to the basket.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I would like, you know, if he gets that jump shot going consistently and it isn't as flat, just to change the way teams play the pick and roll with John Wall. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of teams go under the pick and roll when they're defending John Wall. But, you know, if he gets that jump shot, it'll change the look that the team gets defensively in those pick and roll situations.
Yeah, definitely. And he can get to his spot. Like, he can get to that elbow off the high screen and roll. Like, he can get to the spot. Teams are not going to – they're going to go under the screen, right? Because he's just – he was that fast. I don't know how – what's going to happen after the Achilles injury in terms of his rehab. Does he have his speed back? We've seen clips about his athleticism, him still being able to dunk at an amazing clip, actually, in terms of his bounce. But at the same time, if he does have his speed, right, yeah, you want him to be able to knock down that shot consistently, because we've seen, like, Ben Simmons is a prime example, right? He was injured, he came back, and his J was still scared to shoot the basketball. So you would only think that his J was still broke, right? So, like, that's what you think about. Like, you hope that when a player takes the time off, that, you know, he improves on some certain aspects of his game. And to me, I think John Wall is that individual. I think John Wall is a guy that is motivated to, you know, when he's heard all the noise, to a point where it's like, all right, you guys think that, you know, I'm a detriment to this team, right? I'm going to show you that once I get back, I'm going to be I'm going to play at the highest level. He did say something on the podcast that was, you know, pretty cool. He was like, you all haven't even seen me fully healthy. I've been playing with bad shit. I think he said, spurs in my foot. Like, I've been playing with that, you know, for the last couple of seasons. You haven't even seen me healthy. So that's scary. You know what I'm saying? Like, in terms of if this is all works out for him, seeing a healthier John Wall, maybe a faster John Wall. I mean, we have seen amazing things, like, you know, Russell Westbrook bouncing back from injury and still being explosive.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, guys who are in that great physical shape, you know, often when they have a traumatic injury such as, you know, John Wall and Russell Westbrook, they're able to, you know, because of, you know, today's athletes, they have, you know, cooks, and they have all types of special, you know, rehab, you know, the teams invested heavily in, you know, sports science and sports medicine. They're able to rebound. They're able to come back on the court often, sometimes better. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the hope for John Wall. But for me, that better would include an improved jump shot.
Definitely.
I'm just going to be honest.
No, I'm with you. It has to be a better. His jumper has to improve. So if John Wall is a better basketball player, what does that mean for the Wizards? Like, what does that make them contenders in the Eastern Conference, or just still five, you know, fifth seed?
No. Absolutely doesn't make them a contender. You still have the Bucks. The Nets will have Kevin Durant, a healthy Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. Boston's still a team to be reckoned with. And then we never know how it's going to play out with Indiana. You know, if Victor Oladipo comes back healthy, and, you know, with the addition of Jeremy Lamb, and then also Malcolm Brogdon. And then Sabonis, that's a very formidable four right there. Mm-hmm. You know, so at best, Wizards could possibly be fifth.
Okay. So you mentioned Toronto too, right?
Oh, no, I didn't. In Toronto.
Yeah, which is a well-coached team. You know, at the moment, I'm like this. This is my side of things, and I'm going to read off some Facebook comments. I think the Wizards, to me, are like a 5-6 seed. And I say that with the caveat that Scott Brooks is the coach. I do feel like if John Wall is healthy with a Bradley Beal, with a different coach, I think they could be better than a 5th seed. But that, again, the caveat is Scott Brooks. Because we can only go off what we see with this team in terms of the way they play defense. It's horrendous, right? So even if you put John Wall in that, they still can't defend.
Nope.
You know what I mean? So you just know that they could be a little bit more efficient with John Wall, because people will get easier shots offensively. But at the same time, defensively, that would still be an issue. So I'm with you. I think that, you know, fifth and below, I think they're a playoff team, definitely a playoff team.
John Wall, definitely a playoff team. And also that's the current state of the Wizards. But, you know, if Roy Hachimura, his game progresses, if Thomas Bryant, game progresses, and, you know, Troy Brown, his game progresses, there's no telling. Maybe this team could possibly get into a fourth or fifth seed.
Man, still got the Sixers, man. It's going to get tougher. When KD gets back, it's going to get tougher. Things trickle down. Yeah. I'm with you on that. All right, so on the Wizards Nation Facebook group, Kenny Pender posted in terms of would the Wizards be contenders in the East? He posted there's way more factors that come into play other than Wall coming back. This team this season played terrible defense. Wall coming back won't change that. We were number one in scoring about the entire season without Wall. Our front court has to get better defensively if we want to make the playoffs. Pretty much the same thing I said earlier in terms of this team's defense being a big issue. I don't think John Wall is going to cure the defense. Now, you know, maybe John Wall goes back to John Wall, Kentucky. I think we all forget that John Wall at Kentucky was a strapper. I don't think you're going to get John. I think when you get to the NBA and you get this particular status, it's hard to be that defensive dog. I won't say hard, but people tend to forget their defensive skill. Right, and focus on what they do offensively. Russell Westbrook is another example of one. In college, he was he was all world defensively in the league. He was for a couple of years, you know, he showed that. But after he became Russell Westbrook, Russ West, it was a wrap. William Winter posted on Facebook: no depth, unbalanced about the roster. Can't okay a lick of defense either. A lot for Tommy Shepard to sort out ASAP to even have half a chance of making the Bill Wall era remotely successful.
I'm not gonna say harsh. That's what he believes. That's what he believes.
Yeah.
Look, I have faith that Tommy Shepard to be able to turn this thing around and make the necessary trades or draft picks that can, you know, get this Wizards team back on track and get us a consistent playoff team that can inch their way up, you know, year after year until we get to the Eastern Conference Finals at least.
All right, Marie, two more. Adrian Rogers said we'd be a lot better. Coaching is an issue. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. D. Adams posted, that's a lot of trust on a 31-year-old point guard coming from a major injury. That the team defense still bottom of the league. Oh, that's true. 31-year-old John Wall. It's a little different.
It is, but maybe the time away from the game that get it. Allows him to heal his body and, you know, improves his skill set. His jump shooting and his ball handling. Uh-huh. His decisions with the ball in his hand.
No, I think you're right though. You can fine tune your skills. I don't think there's nothing wrong with saying that. I think once you get an opportunity, when you're sitting and watching, right? One, the mental game is now something that you have to lean on. So you're watching, you're learning even more. You're learning about your opponents. You're learning from some of the better point guards that this team saw throughout the season. You're like, you know what, how can I put that in my game? Or if you're watching basketball in general, you're watching basketball more. So now you're like saying, okay, I'm going to take notes. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You know what I'm saying? So you're learning from all of the – you're learning while you're sitting on the bench. Then on the flip side, like, you know, when you're in practice, I mean, when you're trying to get your game right, in terms of what you can do on the court with the injury, yeah, John Wall's legs were jacked up at that time. He can shoot the basketball. You know what I mean? So you can work on follow-throughs. You can work on rotation. You can work on getting a rhythm. Work on, you know what I mean, like arc on your jumper instead of having a flat shot. More rotation on your jumper shot. So there's things that he can now, you know, work on to make his skill set. You're totally right, Wilty.
Yeah, my biggest thing is I hope he just watches old film of Gary Payton.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Because he has the ability to strap up. Like I've seen it. Like you've seen it in college. Like the way he played defense in college, him and Eric Bledsoe, that was top of line defense. That wasn't, and I'm talking about not just collegiate. I'm just talking about period. So hopefully, you know, like you said, Will T. John Wall can get back healthy real quick. If John Wall is healthy, where would you rank him among NBA point guards? So many good ones.
Good question. I think definitely behind a group of Dame Lillard.
Yeah. Steph, right?
Steph, Dame.
Chris Paul. Chris Paul's still out of the world to me, man. He's still that dude.
Yeah, Chris Paul is still that dude. Yeah, he's still that dude. But you know, John Wall's athleticism. I think Chris Paul's.
Yeah, we talking about point guards,
decision,
man.
Decision making and shooting percentage and basketball IQ keeps him over John Wall. I think after that tier, I think he's right in that next tier of point guards.
No,
in my opinion.
No, I'm with you. I think that I think John Wall, one, he has a lot to prove. You know what I mean? I think he's in the tier, like you said, at this moment with the John Morants of the world right now. You know, he's only a rookie in 1 year, but he still has a lot to prove. He has to show that he's that John Wall to be back, you know, in that list. The question is, if we got a healthy John Wall, some people say top five. I don't know. Top five is tough. I would say top 10. He's a top 10 point guard.
Yeah, I would say top 5, top 6.
Oh wow, okay, all right.
In my opinion.
Yeah, no, I like John Wall. Like I'm one of the biggest like believers in John Wall because I believe in me and you talk about this all the time. Like I believe in a traditional point guard. Like you see a guy that sets you up. Who is a pass first point guard who's about getting, you know, he's made a lot of individuals money. Trevor Ariza, he improved Bradley Beal when Bradley Beal wasn't a ball handler. Although he helped Otto Porter, you know, when John Wall is going, people eat. I hate that term that everybody eat, you know, everybody gets to eat when John Wall was hurt. But when John Wall is John Wall, people eat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So look at Gortat. What has Gortat been of late since he punked out about, well, since you, I can say, since you bitched about John Wall, where has Gortat been of late? Do you even hear of Gortat anymore? No, exactly.
No.
Exactly. All right. The Saints signed Jameis Winston. We'll discuss this. We'll discuss the signing after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Straight off the block, blast in my head, trusting no man, got my clock, running that thing, you understand? And if he's steaming, blazing, I swear the boy's crazy. Holly grown them, think about where I was raised in. Baby was engaging, running, ducking, fidging, rocks under their tongues and keys under their beds. And hood for the real soldiers, 24-7 hustlers. Into the strap of barrel, down your pipe, suckers. Ain't no love for no buster, no fear for no coward, no respect for no slut, and no money.
Like old school Wheezy, block is hot, Cash Money. We don't like that. Anyway, you listen to Urban Sports, saying myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy is out. Put my man, we're doing our social distancing show. So I'm patching Will T in. All right, Will T, here we go. The New Orleans Saints signed free agent quarterback Jameis Winston to a 1-year deal for $1.1 million, but could be worth $3.4 million in incentives. Thoughts on the deal?
I think it's a good opportunity for Jameis Winston to play behind Drew Brees and learn, and also being coached by Sean Payton. You know, the biggest drawback The biggest drawback to Jameis Winston's game is his belief in his arm to throw into tight spots, and then also his field decision making.
Yeah, I think that Jameis should flourish in the situation. Surprised that he took such a cheap deal. You know, Kaysom Hill is paid more than him, so kind of surprised that and it's even with the centers, it's not like anything that I would expect Jameis Winston to sign for. I know a lot. But I'm with you, though. You get to learn from Sean Payton. You saw what he did to Teddy Bridgewater. He had a gruesome injury. And now, he's a starter of the Carolina Panthers. So maybe Jameis is thinking this is a way to revamp, his image in terms of being a quarterback.
Yeah, it's definitely a great opportunity for Jameis Winston to come in, learn, help himself by correcting some of the mistakes he made during his 5 years in Tampa. Excuse me. And then going from there.
Mm-hmm. No, I think, yeah. And there are things you can learn. I mean, if he gets to play, well, one, he has to, well, this is a whole different thing. This COVID stuff hurts him in terms of, showing his work in preseason, right? Because you want to showcase something, because you can't bank on Drew Brees being hurt. But if Drew Brees is, Drew Brees gets hurt, and there's a situation that happened what happened last season with Teddy. Jameis will get the opportunity to showcase his skill set as a starter. But I've always said that, in terms of throwing the football, I know Jameis throws a lot of interceptions, but he makes a lot of plays too. His arm, and he's a smart quarterback. I know interceptions, people are like, man, how can he be smart? He's a smart quarterback. Tampa Bay with Jameis Winston. Typically we're like fighting for a playoff spot. It would be like 7, and they would be like 9-7 or 8-8. But it's not like, Jameis was the reason why they didn't make the postseason. You know what I mean? There were games that Jameis balled out, and certain individuals kind of cost them W's. And you got players on that team now that admitted it. You know what I mean? Some of those interceptions weren't on Jameis. They were on some of the wide receivers running wrong routes. So, or drop balls or tip balls and things of that sort. So, I mean, I've always felt like Jameis got a bad rap in Tampa Bay. But they wanted to go a different direction. Playing for, Sean Payton, Drew Brees, you get to learn from greatness at the end of the day, right? These are guys who, one is a great offensive mind, is a head coach and an offensive guru, and then you have one of the best quarterbacks who ever did it, and Drew Brees, who's playing at a high level, even at the age of 41. I wonder if Brees decides to retire after this season, would Sean Payton even think about re-signing if Jameis, whatever happens, thinking about re-signing Jameis to be their long-term goal, or would he go with Kaysom Hill?
That's an interesting question. The sizable investment that they made in Taysom Hill.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Will lead me to believe that Taysom Hill at least has a chance to compete for the starting quarterback position. Not this season, but in season next season, because it's a 2-year deal, and Jameis is only signed for 1 year.
Yeah.
But I think if we're being realistic, right now, Jameis Winston is a far better quarterback than Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I agree. I think Taysom Hill is a better athlete, right, than Jameis. But in terms of playing the quarterback position, no, he's not. He's not Jameis Winston. You know what I mean? And he's the quarterback whose reads are limited, right? We can say that from what we've seen. I mean, even preseason, his reads are limited. He's like, you know, if that first read isn't there, he's off and going because he's a mobile quarterback. He's off and going. So and there's nothing wrong with that. You know your game. You're not trying. If you don't see it, don't throw it. Right. You know what I mean? You were athletic enough to run, then run. But in terms of, you know, anticipation, I'm staying in the pocket. Jameis is better. Now, obviously, in today's football, now people want to look for the mobile quarterback. Taysom Hill makes that easy because he's a guy who's physical in terms of running the football, and also he's fast. But that's not – you can't just be that and, you know, play the quarterback position. I know he has an arm, but in terms of accuracy, Jameis is – accurate enough. His issue was decision making. It's not accuracy, it's more decision making. So I guess my question is, like, you talked about this before, Will T, with like Cam Newton, but I'll put it out there again. Like, Jameis not getting a starting position in the NFL, is it part of, you know, a black quarterback can't mess up, because once he messes up, you know, he's delegated to being a backup from now, you know, being titled the backup. While other, go ahead.
You know, I try not to, you know, make these generalized or very broad statements when it comes to black quarterbacks. But I'll say this. I'm not going to say you can't mess up. You have to be perfect, but they're definitely, you have to ask yourself this question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jameis Winston, Cam Newton. I understand Miami. They have
Tua.
They drafted Tua, and you have Ryan Fitzpatrick. But I mean, it's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. Look at the Chargers, man. That's another.
Look at the Chargers. You know, you have Tyrod. You know, they believe in Tyrod Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they have Justin Herbert. So, I'm not going to knock them. But I definitely think that you could do a lot worse than Cam Newton and
Jameis
Winston. Yeah. You know, just looking at some of the quarterback play that's, you know, in the league right now.
Yeah. I know they just signed. I know the Titans, because he did play well, but you know, Tannehill got another opportunity.
I mean, come on, man, let's be for real.
Like, is Tannehill better than? I mean, I'm not going to put Jameis, but Tannehill better than Cam Newton? Like,
no,
not even close.
He's not even better. He's not better than Jameis.
Yeah, I didn't say. I didn't even want to go there. I'm just saying, like, I agree, but I'm just saying, like, I'll use the obvious. Like, is he even better than Cam Newton? Not even close. It's not even a debate. Yeah, I'm with you though. You're like you, but you can say this is my thing about the Titans and Jameis. And this is the only thing. Like, the Titans play a ball control game, right? So Jameis throws picks. It kind of hurts them, right? Because Jameis' reputation. But like, Cam is safe with the ball. Like, Cam don't throw a rack. He don't throw a lot of picks.
Yeah, he doesn't throw a lot of picks. He hasn't been his accuracy.
Yeah,
hasn't been consistent.
But what is Ryan? Who is Ryan Tannehill? Tannehill.
I get it.
You know, that's the thing. So that's what kind of gets me when I'm looking at, when we're looking at, you know, people like Jameis Winston and Cam Newton. I think about it a lot. It's like when you're done starting in another position, another situation, it's like you don't get the second. That's hard to get that second chance. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I like Phillip Rivers, dude. Like, Phillip Rivers is my dude. Like, I rock with Phillip Rivers. But he threw, like, how many interceptions last year?
Yeah.
You watched Phillip last year? Like, he wasn't great. He wasn't good last year. And he's the starting quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah. I mean, that one's a little bit head-scratching to me. You know, if I'm the Colts and I have a choice between Phillip Rivers and Jameis Winston.
Like now?
Or or Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going with the last two.
Yeah.
You know.
I would say
to Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I would say Cam over Phillip, because when Cam is, I mean, if you look at Cam's resume, it is. I would take Jameis too, because they're younger. Just to be real, like, they're younger. And Phillip came off a bad year. Yeah, he came off a bad year last season. As an older quarterback, you know what I mean? Like, as an older quarterback, he came off a bad year.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's not like he's young coming off a bad year. As an older quarterback, he came off a bad year. So I would definitely consider not going with Phillip over those individuals. All right, so on our Facebook page, posed the question, why do you think Jameis chose the Saints? And was it a smart move? My man Troy posted, no true starting options, so he decided to take a redshirt year to learn from great offense, great offense minds, and Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Pretty much the same thing we talked about. And my man George, what's up, George? Posted, because Drew Brees is a good chance to get hurt, injured. Is he really? Is it that easy for Drew Brees to get hurt? Wasn't last year like, I thought last year was like the only one, right? Or was he hurt the year before that? Was he?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
All right, he said, and will probably retire at season's end. And if Winston wants to have a long career in the NFL, playing for Sean Payton is a pretty good way to do it. See Teddy Bridgewater and Tony Romo. Yeah, good Tony. Yeah, Tony Romo. Sean Payton did like help Tony Romo too. I forgot about that.
Yep.
I did totally forgot about that. Well, I mean, George, appreciate it. My man George, he's going to be on the podcast, the Skins podcast.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah, man. Yes, man. You know what I mean? He's got his own podcast. I didn't even know that. Found out like a couple weeks ago that he has his own podcast.
Oh, that's what's up.
You know it, bro. But it's time for the main event anyway, man. During Sunday's episode, we got to see Kobe Bryant. I almost shed a tear, man. I saw Kobe talk. Nike, the Dream Team, and the Bulls 1993 run to the three-peat. We'll talk about episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Team. You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene. One co-host. I ain't a guard. I can't say I'm a guard. From Nigeria. Spring Hill Lakeside, for real. Wole! I can't do Will T because Will T is on the phone. But I'll do. Actually, I can't do Will T. Other co-host. I ain't going to say where he's from because he don't want that information out there. Ice. Willie. T. What's up, Will?
What's going on, man? It's a terrible nickname. Can you use that again, man?
All right, man. Ray Jeezy's out. All right, episode 5 and 6 of The Last Dance aired Sunday. What stood out to you about episode 5? I think 5 was featuring more of the Olympics and whatnot, and Nike.
Yeah, 5 was more of the Nike, the story behind Nike and the Dream Team in 1992. Mm-hmm. What stood out to me was Michael Jordan's comments about Isaiah Thomas.
I know, right?
You know,
the pettiness is real, dude.
Huh?
The pettiness is real, dude.
It is. It's interesting that, you know, and I'm not calling Michael Jordan a liar by any means, but it's interesting that he says he has nothing to do with omitting Isaiah Thomas from the Dream Team. But Jack McCloskey, who was considered the general manager of USA Basketball at the time, who was the head of the Detroit Pistons, he wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
And in his book, he stated that, this isn't verbatim, essentially that, you know, when Michael Jordan was asked about participating in the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
he wanted to know who would be involved.
Yeah.
And it was kind of insinuated whether, and I think it was maybe his agent or
David Falk.
Yeah. Or through Michael Jordan. I'm not clear. I don't have the text in front of me that, having Isaiah Thomas would lessen the probability of him playing.
Yeah, I don't know. That situation, it's just weak to me. On it's not even Jordan. Like, even if there were other players, right, that had an issue, but you know, because Matt, there's an article that said Magic denied the reports that he didn't want Isaiah on the team. There are other. Like, there, people mention other players. I mean, obviously, Scottie Pippen. If you want to include Magic Johnson, fine. Magic Johnson, Jordan, Bird, right? And I heard Karl Malone, right?
Yeah.
Karl Malone. One, this is my issue with it. Other than Bird, Magic, and Michael, to be real with you, none of them dudes hold weight. Like, I don't want to hear about the other dudes because at that time, they held no weight. You know what I'm saying? Like, Karl Malone at that time didn't hold any weight compared to Isaiah. You can say that Karl Malone... Like, I think we all seen the play, right? When he elbowed Isaiah on that dirty play, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, who is Karl Malone in this situation? Like, it, to me, like, when I'm looking at it, like, I can, if you want to argue a point with me and say, all right, you know what I'm saying, Jordan Bird, especially Jordan and Bird and Pippen, right? If they wanted to, like, if they had an issue with it, I could get it, you know. Pistons Celtics were heated. We all know about Pistons, Bulls, we get it. Like, we can, whatever. In terms of the Lakers, you can talk about Magic, Isaiah, and the rumors or whatever. I even think that's weak for Magic, you know, to go off secondhand stuff to have a beef with somebody without talking to your man one-on-one. You know what I'm saying? I think that's weak to even feel a certain way about that individual without talking to that individual man up. But at the same time, like to me, it's weak to not allow the dude to play because of that. And then it's an exhibition. And it's an all-star game. Let's be real. Like, the Olympics were an all-star game. That Dream Team was an all-star team, right? There were nobody who was going to – there was nobody in the world that was going to compete. So why not have the best players on the court and it would still be special? Because we've seen it in the all-star game. We've seen it in all-star games back then. Back then, the all-star games were lit, right? They were amazing. Those are amazing all-star games.
I mean, and if we're being honest
–
Larry Bird with his back issue
wasn't
one of the best players in the NBA at that time.
Nah.
The case could be made that Dominique Wilkins
was a
better player.
Dominique Wilkins was I agree.
Was a better player at that time than Larry Bird because of his back issues.
But we'll see. Dominique Wilkins is better than most players on that roster. Other than some, if you go off of what like the criteria was. Even back then, so you got players basically it's people we grew up watching. I mean, and from the 80s to the 90s, right? Let's think about it. That's pretty much what it was. None of the players, Chris Mullin, and I like Chris Mullin. And I'm looking at threes, even Scottie to a certain extent. Scottie was obviously, I'm not saying Scottie was a bump, Scottie's not a bump. We forget how good Dominique was, though. You know what I mean? At the time Dominique left the game, he was in the top 10, I wouldn't even say the top 5, in terms of scoring. Like, he was there of all-time scorers. You know what I'm saying? In the 80s, we saw the battles with the Celtics, Atlanta versus, you know, I mean, Neek versus Bird. Like, we forget how good Neek was. Like, and he was the star. You know what I mean? Karl Malone was in this, but the Jazz, they weren't contenders. With Stockton Malone, they were contenders. They were good. They were good teams, but they weren't contenders. They weren't getting past the Blazers and the Lakers. You know what I'm saying? Like, they weren't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you know with Neek, Bird and the Celtics were a hindrance. You know what I mean? Like, it was hard for them to get to the finals because of the all-time great Celtics teams, but he was competing. He was playing at the high level. So arguably, you can say Neek was just as good as most people on that dream team. I mean, and involving, and also Isaiah was better than most players on that dream team. But yeah, I thought that kind of caught my eye when I was like, damn, Jordan, aren't we done with the Isaiah stuff? Like, aren't we done?
I mean, look, he did give him his flowers by saying, look, if we looking at him being honest, I consider Magic Johnson
the greatest
point guard in NBA history. And behind him is Isaiah Thomas, but he had to hate it, even though you know, how he feels about him personally.
Yeah. But my thing is that,
what would be interesting, mm-hmm, is, all right, we saw the way that roster was, you know, the guys who agreed, because if you remember, they named the first 10 people,
mm-hmm,
to the dream team.
Yeah.
My thing I'm curious to know is, if you didn't get a John Stockton and you weren't able to get a Magic Johnson,
yeah, mm-hmm, would you have had
Isaiah Thomas, would it have been different then?
No,
right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so, man. I think it was... This is my thing. Like, if Jordan, and I get what Jordan is saying. He wasn't the only one. But if Jordan said, "I don't care, you can have Isaiah, it won't bother me," then Isaiah would be on the team. Because Jordan was, if you look at how David Stern built, you know, he was already David Stern pretty much gave Jordan the keys anyway. You dig what I'm saying? He gave Jordan the keys to the league. Like, all right, we're gonna promote you. We're gonna make you the league. What we did for Magic and Bird, we're gonna do this for you right now. Like, you're the league right now. So. Like, if Jordan said, "Yo, I don't care. Like, if you think we need Isaiah, all right." If he had that cavalier approach, Isaiah would be on the team. So I'm not saying that I believe Jordan by saying, like, I believe Jordan in this aspect. I believe he's not the only one. I do believe that. I believe he's not the only one. But yeah, I do know his word has clout.
His word would have carried more than any other player,
of course,
on that team.
That's the point. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because to your point, Bird had back injury. You think Bird really cared? If you watch the
practices, Larry Bird didn't even play up. Larry Bird didn't even play up.
Exactly. So I don't even like when people mention Larry Bird. Larry Bird didn't care. He was cool.
Larry Bird was laying on the floor.
and if you know some of the players, like their temperaments, right? Like, mm-hmm, you know Chris Mullin. Chris Mullin don't be caring about that stuff. He a New York boy. He don't care about that stuff. Like, that's not his thing. That's not what he's about. There's a lot of, if you go back and look at those players and if you really paid attention to them in their other teams and how they play ball, you can pretty much gauge maybe who had an issue with Isaiah. If you really wanted to break it down, you could pretty much gauge
We all know who it was. Jordan, Pippen, maybe Magic,
yeah,
because of, you know, how things went, you know, yeah, because of the rumors that I'm not going to repeat.
Me either.
And how things went with them during their matchup in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Larry Bird and Karl Malone.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. Yeah. You can go off of that alone. All right, man, let's go to the Kobe portion, man. When you saw Kobe Brown on the episode, man, how did that make you, like, did you feel a little something? Man,
it's
Kobe.
To be honest with you, no.
Okay, I mean, it's cool.
No. Do I miss? I guess I didn't. You know, for me, it still kind of feels surreal,
mm-hmm,
right? I don't really, you know. I know he's gone, but it doesn't feel like he's gone just because of his presence and, you know, being able to watch his clips and hearing his interviews. It'll hit me. I think for me, it'll hit me if or when they have the enshrinement in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Okay.
You know, then I'll see him, you know, I'll, it'll, you know, yeah, probably hit harder, but yeah, it's going to be a little bit tougher. But it was good to hear his perspective on his how he viewed Michael Jordan and his relationship with Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I wanted a little bit more. I kind of wanted, you know, some of Jordan's feedback with the two. You know what I mean? Like kind of back and forth with the two of them. I mean, I know you. I think that was an opportunity to showcase just Kobe, but I kind of would like them, you know, kind of like have Jordan like co-sign on it. You dig what I'm saying? Like co-sign it even more. Like that's my little brother. Blah blah blah. You know what I'm saying? But it was cool because we got the real. I mean, we still got footage of it though, right? You know what I'm saying? Of their interaction during the All-Star game and whatnot. But yeah, Kobe said some real thoughtful things, some true things, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, how can you pretty much like. You can't compare us because I got my stuff from him. You know what I mean? I wouldn't have been me if it wasn't for him. You know what I'm saying? So it was cool, man. Like, yeah, I felt a little certain way though when I saw it. You know what I mean? I try not to, it's hard for me to see Kobe talk or whatnot because it's like, dang, because it's like you get the realization that this is pretty much it what you're going to see from Kobe Bryant. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is it. But yeah, man.
Yeah, I get it, but I don't know. Just it. When people say, and I know this is, you know, this segment is about Kobe Bryant, it's about Last Dance and Michael Jordan.
Yeah, no, you good.
When people say Mamba mentality, right? Yeah. Like, I really feel as if that spirit lives on, and it's kind of hard for me to equate with him not being here because I know that spirit lives on in so many different ways.
No, you're right. It does a lot. I mean, you see it. I mean, truth be told, man, you see it like with Jordan, like during his last dance, you know, and his work after. It's like when I saw it, I was like, yeah, Mamba mentality. Now he's the originator of it, right? Like that's the originator. But still, like when you look at it, you're like, yo, yeah, Mamba mentality. This is what, you know, obviously you could tell that these two talked a lot on the phone. You could tell, like, their interaction was real. No, I'm with it. You know what I mean? Like, when I watched it, I was like, all right. But it was a good interaction. It was something that I did like it. I just wanted more of it. You know what I'm saying? And they may have not had enough, you know what I mean, in terms of footage, right, to really, you know, go in on it. But it was so good and so insightful that I kind of wanted more of it.
Also, shout out to ESPN or the four-letter – you know, sports.
Yeah, go ahead for
network.
It. It's okay. Call them what you want.
No, they have been marketing the hell out of this.
Oh my god, yeah, it's they're doing a tremendous job.
Yeah, it's a whole thing, and you know, Jalen Rose. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of the podcasts.
I saw the last one for the first time.
Like, Jalen, you need to lighten up on the makeup, my brother.
I know what, a little bit too much, right?
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, you can barely see the hair. Like, his hairline looks funny because of it.
He looked like milk.
That's what...
Lighten up on that makeup, my brother. You look like milk.
I'm about to die. All right, man, hold on. How about the Nike part of the Nike segment of episode 5?
It's interesting, man, because of, you know, based off of the story, if Michael Jordan had his way, he would be with Adidas.
I know. That's tight. That's tough, bro. I know Adidas like, damn.
I know whoever decided not to make that deal
got fired
and is probably still kicking themselves to this day.
I know. And Mom Dukes is like, you better take that deal, boy.
Yeah.
She wasn't playing. You better take the money. Yeah. And they built it around him. It was cool how David Falk had that vision, though. Like, he was like,
it is, man. That's why David Falk is probably, you know, and we think about the history of basketball from a business perspective.
Mm-hmm.
David Stern, David Falk, and Dr. Jerry Buss,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the modern NBA, they're probably three of the most important businessmen in the modern NBA, you know, mm-hmm. Dr. Jerry Buss, because, you know, he had the Lakers girls and he created an atmosphere
mm-hmm.
In L.A. where basketball was the it thing. And in a town in L.A., that's hard to do, right? Mm-hmm. David Stern, for him getting the NBA finals off of broadcast delay and finding a way to get the NBA finals and NBA games played live and and the, and his ability to change the how they market players and market franchises, right? And then David Falk, you know, what he did for, you know, setting up Michael Jordan to get a signature shoe, and then kind of the Jordan branding, and his ability to pair him with brands and, you know, change how we, you know, change the business of basketball for players.
Yeah, see how he tried. He brought back his originals for the Knicks. The Knicks game, and dude said he was bleeding the sock.
It was kind of watching the episode. Watching the episode 5 and 6 was kind of hard as a Knicks fan. Man.
Look, man, I'm going right into it. Dave. Look at you, man. You don't even see what I'm doing right now. You just segued into it, man. We going to the 1993 season, like episode 6. As a Knicks fan, man, looking at how that's – and let me say this, though. I do want to say this, and I hope that you remember. But people, like, that document – this is one thing about documentaries people have to understand. Like, they don't always give you the whole story. Like, when the Bulls went – were down 0-2, game 3, Jordan played like crap. They made it seem like he came back like gangbusters, though. Like, after 0-2, like, Jordan came back with a vengeance. Nah, he went like 3-for-18 in game 3. Like, Jordan wasn't good in game 3. You know what I'm saying?
He wasn't. I mean, that part was kind of torturous, to be honest with you. Yeah. No, I was as a Knicks fan because, look, I genuinely thought the Knicks, number one seed in the East, up 2-0 against the Bulls. I thought they really had them on the ropes. And even that, and even game 3, like they had a chance to win game 3.
They
go up 3-0. You know, it kind of brought back some I still have PTSD from that, man. I'm just going to say that.
No, it's just that, you know, but going through all that with the whole gambling thing. And can I add this, though? Like, you know, like, really, we're going to blow up gambling? Like, that's what we're doing? We're going to blow it up like it's a sin?
It doesn't have anything to blowing up gambling. Yeah. Right? What it has to deal with is, all right, if you're gambling, right, what's the limit, right?
Yeah.
So if you're gambling on golf games and you owe huge amounts of money or you're indebted to a bookie, what's the limit? Yeah. Where do you stop?
So where do you stop?
Like, where do you stop? Like, I'm not accusing Michael Jordan of doing anything, of trying to throw a game or anything, but it just, the perception of it.
The limits, because Pete Rose and whatnot. This is my thing with the whole, I don't think he had a problem. I'm on the side of saying, like, all right, and I think, I forgot who said this, but I totally agree. I think it was David Aldridge who said this. I think it was David Aldridge. I could be wrong, though. But, like, Jordan, you know, gambling... You know, say he lost 10,000. It's like us losing like $5. I mean, us, you know, betting $5, $10. You dig what I'm saying? Like, that don't mean
nothing. Well, that's like you betting $5 or $10. I'm not betting $5 or $10. I lose $5 or $10. I would be furious.
Yeah. Well, T's correct.
That's why I don't gamble.
Yeah, for me, I do gamble. So just like for me losing $5, $10, I wouldn't even care. Like $5, $10 ain't nothing. That's like bullcrap. You know what I mean? So I get it. You know what I mean? So he has the money. So, you know, he ain't as long as he ain't losing, you know, his life savings. You know, I feel like he's under control with his gambling situation. But I get what you're saying though, in terms of the optics, right? Like you're showing like you have no limits. You'll do whatever. And I mean, it doesn't look good when you know, your bookie's like a drug dealer or whatever. So I mean,
So I mean, like I don't think there's anything wrong with the gambling per se. It's just kind of where's the limit. And you gotta think back to the time back in that time, you weren't that far removed from Pete Rose being banned for life from MLB.
That's true. That's true.
So, right, and the game of basketball was just becoming like the sport of the world.
Yeah,
and the biggest icon, the most popular person,
was Michael Jordan.
And I think it's fair to say the most popular person in the world at that time,
Michael Jordan,
was Michael Jordan.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was Michael Jordan was it. So in '93, your most, I guess, you know, the Sun series. I mean, the Sun series in the finals, when they got to the finals. Like, watching the clips over again, and I know people like to say, like, you know, 90s defense. And I'm all, like, I was actually on that side, too, about 90s defense was real. But when I watched that Suns defense against Jordan, like, especially, you know, the shot before Paxson, shooting, mm-hmm. winning the three. Like, him going coast to coast when no one's stopping him or in trying
yeah, that
to.
Was not that,
that's horrible
yeah,
defense. That's I don't want to hear nothing. Like, I'm kind of, like, over, like, the whole this person can't play in this generation because the defense was so trill. Like, when I watched that, even today's
that
defense.
That's what I like to call El Matador.
El Matador defense. Like, but no one stopped him at all. Like, no one tried to get in front of him. You dig what I'm saying? Like, no yeah. one. At least try to get in front of him so you can stop the, you know, hold the clock. You know what I'm saying? Like, at least that's, like, buying more time. Because you're up four. Like, you're buying more time. And I'm like, I don't want to ever hear anybody talk about defense and, like, how certain people couldn't score in that defense. I'm not saying, like, that one situation is the overall character of how defense is played, was played in the 90s. I'm not saying that. But it just shows you that every team didn't strap up. So, like, every team didn't strap up. But, yeah, I thought that Suns team, I said, and I'm going to keep saying it, was one of the best teams I saw. I thought that team legitimately was going to beat the Bulls. That's the only team I felt like when the Bulls were in the finals that I felt that they was going to truly beat the Bulls. What was that Suns team?
Not me. I really thought that
I'm going to say Jazz.
No, the Sonics.
Did you really? You thought the Sonics were going to beat them?
No, I didn't think. I thought that they matched up well.
Oh.
And the Sonics had superior athleticism to the Bulls. And I would have liked to have seen Gary Payton matched up with Jordan for all six games.
I feel like you I felt like that wasn't the best Gary Payton. I felt like the best Gary Payton was like 2-3 years after that. Like, his jumper was better. He was a better basketball player. I thought Jordan called him when he was relatively.
He was a better basketball player, but I thought you take Gary Payton and probably Pippen or Jordan would have to play him, right?
Yeah.
But then that would have left Hersey Hawkins and Detlef Schrempf with advantages and matchup. Mm-hmm. And then always you had Sean Kemp.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, they were a good team. I just thought that Suns team was just well. I mean, in terms, I know KJ didn't play this, have his best series, but looking at how their style of offense, well, the way Barkley was playing that season, like, I just thought, like, I thought that team was dangerous. And also the way they were jacking threes up, like, you know, like, they were pretty much, I guess you can say, like, a poor man's Golden State Warriors. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, a poor man's Golden State Warriors in terms of, like, Danny Ainge, Dan Majerle, and Paul Westphal. Like, all he wanted to do was shoot threes. He wanted to run and shoot threes. And he even had Barkley shoot threes a couple of times. So, I mean, yeah. I just thought they, you know, they were about it. And then to take two in Chicago, I mean, when I was watching that series as a kid, you lost two at home. But you took two in Chicago. You know how hard it was to win in Chicago back then?
Yeah, and then I'll never forget that triple overtime game.
Yeah,
I remember. I fell asleep.
Yeah, so
in the last overtime.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, it was, and you know, but Jordan had a great series though. Like, Jordan was amazing in that series. I was like, damn. Like, every time I watched, like, damn, Jordan's answers. He answered everything. I mean, like, Barkley mentioned that, I think, game two, where, you know, Barkley was balling, but Jordan was just better. You know what I mean? It's just like, it was. Like, that 93 season, I mean, in terms of all, like, the championships, and this is not hate, this is how I really truly feel. Like, I felt like that team, like, when you compare, you know, other great, you know, other, you know, finals in terms of all-time great players and teams they beat in the finals, like, that team was, like, that finals, I was like, to win a three-peat and to beat the Suns, that was big time. Like, that was big time to me. Because that team was ready, and that team wasn't scared for real. Like, that team thought they can beat the Bulls, and the Bulls still, you know, 1-6. But yeah, it was definitely a good documentary, man. It's been a good documentary. I can't even hate, man. I don't do it. I told folks I don't hate on all the folks who are listening who think I'm a hater on Jordan. I try to stay as objective as possible. You know what I'm saying? Real talk. That's real talk. But it's time to close the show out, man.
Yeah. So I'm. I want to anticipating seeing episodes 7 and 8 mm-hmm. this Sunday.
Me too.
You know, it's a great docuseries, but the going back and forth, you know, that's a little bit off putting.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I thought that, and there's still time. You know, mm-hmm. there's still 4 episodes left that we would really hone in on that last season.
Yeah,
I understand you have to. There's a story to be told.
Yeah.
But, you know, the switching back and forth. But,
I agree with you.
You know,
I thought it was
on
like
the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like you're drudging up like things that other the teams, like fans with other teams, don't want to see. Just stick to the whole, like the last season, like the last dance. Like
yeah,
the last
I thought we would see like very intimate details of the last season. You know. That's what I was looking forward to. Now, I understood there's a story to tell, and you have to go back and you have to set the record for,
set the tone for what's going to happen.
Set the tone for what's to come and how we got there. Mm-hmm. But you could do it a lot better at ESPN than flashing back and forth between time periods.
Well, you know, ESPN's going. They're working on where it is. They're working on the Magic doc. You know what I'm saying? On the court and off the court. That's the rumor. Yeah.
It would be great. I mean, outside of you know, if we think of the players that truly transformed the NBA over the last 30 years, there's Jordan, there's Bird, there's Magic, there's Kobe, mm-hmm. and there's LeBron.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you can tell, you know, LeBron's story is still
And Kareem,
yeah,
so.
Written.
Yeah, I mean, Kareem.
Yeah. You know, LeBron's story is still being written.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kobe, rest in peace.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely a tale people want to.
Oh, definitely.
Want to hear, you know, more of him, you know, even though off the, you know, he started to open up a little bit more once he left the game.
Yeah.
You got to see more aspects of his personality. That would be interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you got that. And, I mean, and what they could do is they can do a Isaiah Thomas joint because it's already hot. It would be popping right now. Like you should really jump on this. You should jump on this right now.
They should. They should. I mean, they should. Isaiah Thomas, bad man.
Yeah,
one of the greatest guards. You know, to me, the greatest guard that's 6 feet or under to ever play in the NBA.
I mean,
he's the second best point guard of all time.
Yeah. I don't think you can argue that. I don't think you can argue that. Yeah. You know, I love Allen Iverson. Like, that's – I'm a Georgetown fan. AI, you know, obviously in terms of, the, you know, basketball, in the streets, everything. Like, you know, he just related to a lot of people. But when you look at resume, you know, in the 80s when they were dynasties, we're talking about all-time great teams, and that dude knocked off both of them squads, and
he knocked off the Lakers. He knocked off the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept Michael Jordan in the Bulls.
Yep.
He doesn't. To me, he, you know, I've always been a huge fan of Isaiah Thomas. Yeah. He just doesn't get his
well.
Justice.
Yeah, it's making it worse now because, you know, again, I'm gonna say this, and Will, you're not one of them, but like, this is my issue with like a lot of Jordan fans, and it's like if whatever Jordan says, or you go against what Jordan does. It's like it's the worst thing in the world, man. And you get crucified for it. Like, and that's the thing why Isaiah is getting right now. Because he's the anti-Jordan, is crucified for it. And it's a shame. It really is a shame. It's a shame because, I mean, people forgetting greatness. And also, man, next week we're gonna talk about Kevin Durant's documentary, man. I wanna make sure we blast that too, because it's coming up. You know about Kevin Durant's documentary about PG County basketball, right?
I do not.
Yeah, it's coming on Showtime, bro.
Oh,
he
when
featuring
when?
PG,
is it coming this week?
Next week. Next week, I want to say the 15th. I want to believe the 15th. Yeah.
I mean, I hope he put me on it.
What?
I hope he puts me on it. I played for one of the better AAU programs that was in
the state
of Maryland.
You going to say the Jaguars,
right? Look, I don't give people all the details of my life, man. I was part of a very special AAU program.
Look, that's why I don't
And, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I should be referenced or mentioned in this documentary.
I want to make sure.
All
right, make sure you know. I'm making sure you know the name of it so you can catch it. It's on Showtime. All right, basketball. It's called Basketball County in the Water, where greatness lies. You know what I'm saying? It's PG County right, balling. Showtime on the 15th. At nine o'clock.
Just for the fans of our show, or I'm not going to even call the fans, but the people who, who enjoy our show and decide to listen.
Yeah.
I was not included in the documentary, so I don't know the portrayal and accuracy of it. A little iffy to me, but I'm going to go into it. Open-minded.
My man. Hey, make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene page. Oh, excuse me. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie. Swag.